Hong Kwan Chen, so fascinating. While you were playing in Carnegie Hall, the New York Philharmonic Orchestra was playing in China. Next week, they'll be playing in Pyongyang, of all places. They'll be playing Dvorak's Symphony from the New World. They'll be playing the Star-Spangled Banner in North Korea. It's kind of amazing, the traffic out there in music, back and forth to Asia.
Yeah, you said it, you know, and when I heard about that, that they were coming. Not only they were coming to China, and my understanding is that they will have little groups, they'll form small groups, you know, with the orchestra members, and they'll go out and elicit, if I can use the word, lots of locals and musician, non-musician, especially non-musicians, and young people especially, and put on some kind of shows, and that involves movement and music. And they want to get young people there involved and to have an experience that they might regard as Western, and they will never forget for the rest of their lives.
I think of you often, Hong Kwan. They're in Shanghai. There you are with a U.S. passport in the commercial capital of the Chinese boom, teaching European classical music. I mean, there you are at the definitive intersection of our amazing times. I want to know what you're thinking, how the world looks from the piano bench of Hong Kwan Chen.
Well, let me start over a little bit. My parents were from China. They ran away, you know, under Mao's regime, and they went to Taiwan. I was born in Taiwan, and I went to, as a 13-year-old boy, I went to Germany to study, and I got my teenage education in the music hochschulers in Germany and high school as well. And then after high school, I came to the U.S., and I studied at the universities, and after 20-odd years, I went to Canada, and I taught there, and then I ended up back in Shanghai.
You chose to go back, right?
Well, this is a surprise. I just got a call from them. I never applied anything. Matter of fact, I never applied anything in my life. And they asked me out of blue and say, would you be willing to be the chairman of the piano department at the Shanghai Conservatory? I say, oops, what was that? Can you repeat that? You know, and I first hesitated because I'm a tree person. I love trees. I love nature. And I didn't remember seeing too many trees in Shanghai and certainly no mountains. And I thought as I got older, I want to go back to the nature. And so I really hesitated. It took me a whole year. And then I phoned them back after 1 year and said, are you still interested in me? And they said, come, we wait. We're waiting. Please come right away. And so I said, I'll come. And so besides what you're saying, yes, I hold a U.S. passport. But not only that, they primarily looking at me as if I were Taiwanese. Now you know about that Taiwan and mainland China business.
Of course. That,
yeah, it's being a Taiwanese, there's another status, you know. Neither good nor bad, it's just that, it's very different. Yeah.
Hong Kong, what is the musical piece in this thickening web of trade and power? Does the cultural mission, I mean, artists like you, see yourselves leading the parade, following the parade, a hood ornament on the parade, or what? Are you the secret heart of the exchange that's going on in our time?
Okay, let me go back a little bit. And that was in 1999. Back then in Taiwan, someone threw a summer camp, a festival, invited a bunch of professors from Moscow Conservatory. And I was the only Oriental teacher, piano teacher there. And very old Russian pianist. And he came up to me and started screaming at me. He says, what are you doing in the U.S.? I said, I teach. He says, you have to come back. This is where you have to teach. I said, yeah, but I come here, you know, and I'll come for the camp and I'll come for master classes if they ask me. This is no. Your people, meaning Chinese or Oriental, requires that your own people have to teach them. And then he said, for him, the Russians, it was Neuhaus, Heinrich Neuhaus, that settled down and taught a whole bunch of people, pianists, such as Richter, Delails, you know, you name it. And then he says, because you have to be the same as they are, and then imparting them the whole thing, it's a holistic event. You have to teach them the philosophy, the artistry, the art of living, and just simply the being. You have to influence them. Mm. It's a long-term thing. It's not about coming to a lesson once a week. Mm. And he says, those once-a-week lesson will not do it. And so that was in 1999. And ever since that, I was walking around with terrible guilt. And I kind of just thought, well, perhaps it will happen one day, because I always believed if I work honestly as I did, and if I worked hard, I think the beloved God will not waste a talent. So then when this phone call happened, you know, asking me to go to Shanghai, I took it, and I thought, this must be the time. This must be the call that I was dreaming about, that perhaps I'll be useful one day in the form of what this old professor was saying. And so now I've been there for 2.5 years, nearly 3 years, and I see the result. And I think with some pride in my heart, yes, I did. And I did change the direction, at least in the piano world. And from whatever they were, now they have had a peek into what it will be in the future.
I want to know what you're teaching, and I also want to know about the music you brought with you. Describe what you've brought.
Well, what I brought is a certain attitude or a paradigm, and that is, firstly, being a musician is to be an artist. And to have an artistic life is unlike what some people might believe, perhaps a sloppy life, perhaps anything goes type of life. No. Being artistic means it's highly intelligent, highly alert, and also very discerning, and also very sensitive to the inside, the inner world, and to the outer world. And so it is all in all in a spiritual experience, in a spiritual life. And so that is what I call a artistic life. In other words, a complex life, a very, very complex life. And it's not a person who is not simply satisfied with the societal norm or dictates or anything that one simply read from the book, but one has to live it, to experience it. And I taught them that, I indicated to them that music or a work, artwork or music work, is a byproduct of such a life. When we learn, we play a piece of music, a great piece of music, say by Beethoven or by Mozart or Schubert, it's a two-way street. We, through our wisdom and understanding, whatever level we are at, we will understand the music in a very specific way. And only when we have this kind of a will, then we are also willing to see what the music can give us. The music in itself contained is also great wisdom. And only when we are up to a certain level, we are able to see that level of wisdom in the music and beyond. And this, which is beyond, will further teach us. And if we are dedicated enough to this work, we then elevate ourselves to that level. And so it's a bit like a Jacob's ladder. It just goes up and up and up. And that becomes what is called an artistic life.
Hong Kwan, I want to ask you how you teach Beethoven. And I'm thinking of the musician, but also the culture hero. I'm thinking of Beethoven, the radical Democrat who ripped off the Bonaparte Symphony title of his Third Symphony after Bonaparte made himself emperor in 1804 and said, no way, we're going to call it the Eroica. He was so angry and so upset at the pretensions, the political pretensions of Bonaparte. But here was a human rights man, a universal thinker. Where do you begin teaching Beethoven to your students in Shanghai?
Gee, I'm so happy to hear what you're saying, because I wish all my students in Shanghai can start at this point. Unfortunately, they are not this far. And, you know, being a musician or a piano student, most of them are simply taught very basics, do's and don't do's. And they have never thought there's anything beyond that. And so when I came in and say, Beethoven is a radical, they look me straight in the face and think, oh, this is very dangerous coming to Mr. Chen's class. What if they go on in the world? What if they become the radical? Where could they end up in this society?
What if they play the music that way?
Well, this is the thing. They don't know how to do that. Now, there's one incredible element in Beethoven, and that is, of course, the surprise element. But surprise element is not simply that you think it is surprise or you put it on, but it is simply because that the urge just to really see things very, very truthfully, which is different from the dictate of the mass. For me, the so-called ego will exit when the artwork becomes so complex they finally gain its own life.
You played one of the mountaintop Beethoven piano pieces, the Hammerklavier Sonata, in Carnegie Hall a week ago. What do you tell your students that this man and this music are all about?
Well, you know, 106, the Hammerklavier Sonata, I played it for a very, very long time. I was 16 when I first started tinkering with this piece. And I learned the notes very quickly, and I was pretty prodigious as a child. But Beethoven himself predicted this was going to be his greatest piece for piano. And not only that, after he finished, he proclaimed he then knew how to compose. Of course, it is considered the first late period piano piece, and probably the real beginning of the late period. And for me, it is a living experience. Mm. Now I have been with it for 34 years. Mm. And Beethoven said at that time, after he finished, and said, it would take 50 years. Now, this 50 years wasn't quite sure whether he was talking about 50 years later people played, which didn't happen, because 100 years later it still was a strange piece, unknown piece. Or he meant that a pianist would take 50 years to understand that piece, which I think is more likely. I think I have a certain understanding of the piece, but I still have 14 years to go before I make a 16 years to go before I'll make a final judgment and whether what he would mean, you know. And I think I'll be still alive to do that. But this piece has accompanied me for the greatest part of my piano career. I brought it back regularly to play, if not to perform, but to play, to look into it again, to look into it again. Each time I look into it, I had different ways of thinking of it. Mm-hmm. And just like what I was saying earlier, this is like a Jacob's ladder. And what I used to think was so important, I might not think next time that was all that important. I shift on, I moved on to some other aspects and so on and so forth. And so it was part of my life, part of my makeup. And also, it has such a richness of material. I think it taught me a great deal what music is all about. And that one of the most important factors in Beethoven's music is dialectic. Dialectic meaning the complexity. In other words, it is not prejudiced or biased or lopsided or out of balance or, you know, decidedly for one thing and not for other. And that one consider all the aspects of it. And it makes it much more complex and much more flavorful.
I wonder sometimes, is China neglecting its own classical music? I also wonder, all at the same time, where in the world would Western classical music be without young Asian players finding new life in it? But how do you see that mix of peoples and musics? Here we are in Gunther Schuller's conservatory, Gunther Schuller, who said all musics were created equal. But that mix of peoples and musics, what's going on, the give and take and the learning and the teaching, the recreating and the performing?
Isn't that fantastic? All music created equal. In the Beethoven's late periods, you know, if you go to his latest string quartet of 130 and so, and there you will reach that point where you believe Beethoven has become one with all, and which is the concept of the Taoist, the Chinese origin. Isn't that funny? I mean, and it doesn't mean the Chinese have this built into their blood. No, it doesn't. But it sounds familiar to them. You know, when you bring it up and say, this is so familiar, they will say, yeah, the concept is familiar. But music isn't. The language isn't familiar. The concept is familiar. Mm. And you go on the street, you talk to the scholars, you talk to people in China. They are no Taoists. They are just as eager to live and have an exciting life and busy life, and they also worry about their survival just as much. And 2 years ago, actually, I realized that there is an old instrument, Chinese instrument called the guqin, or simply called qin, and there was a concert, small concert being put on in Shanghai. I went to it, where there were four guqin masters performing. The first two were younger, and I heard them play, and I thought, wonderful, you know, great technique and very nice. And the third one came, an elderly man, skinny, with the glasses, and when he played, I couldn't move. I was standing room only event, and I was stuck to the wall, and I thought to myself, it vibrated my whole body, and this is what I recognized as Chinese music. This is my origin. Mm. And I was stunned. I never had this. I've never heard a live performance before this of this instrument, the guqin. And so well played and touched me so deeply. Mm. And I must say, the experience that I had in that moment was very similar to what I get when I listen to great Western music. If I'm in the last few minutes of the Art of Fugue by Bach, just when he pronounces his name at the very end in the notes and before it breaks off, It's the same feeling. When he left us, you know, he has propelled us upwards into the space. It's the same feeling. Hmm. It's the same. And so all music are created equal.
Forgive me, I think of you as a great global character. You're doing something that very few people can do, performing, as I say, the greatest of Western music in the rising capital of Shanghai, and I wonder what that head feels like.
Actually, very shrunken. I don't need to see any shrink. Rather small and very humble, because, I personally prefer to perform in the West because the audience is quiet. In China, they're quite noisy, and I actually have to refrain myself from being disturbed. I have to prevent myself from being disturbed. I have to focus very seriously.
These cell phone noises or people noises?
Oh, everything. It can be a candy, and it can be the urging parents comforting the child, and they all meant good. But they all have their own ways, and they're used to the Chinese theaters, you know, those street corner theaters where you can sing along with the singer or dance on or chat. Or anyways, even in the capital of Shanghai, it's not always the ideal place to perform for a performer. However, I do look forward for those far and few in between who were there entirely and with their heart and soul connecting with me. And that, knowing that and sensing that, is very satisfactory.
I want to ask you sort of a political question, but take it or leave it. Leon Fleischer has made a rather big deal at the White House of his huge discomfort at being, in connection with the Kennedy Center honor, having to go to the Bush White House feeling that he didn't belong there in the time of the Iraq War, in time of environmental degradation, in time of Guantanamo. And he wrote about it as a pianist and an artist, feeling the least he could do was express his freedom by protesting where we were. I wonder if that resonated with you. I wonder if the Beijing Olympics resonate with you. Can artists in China, even American artists in China, speak to the anxiety and the unhappiness about China's role in Darfur, for example, or anything else that's going on in China?
I understand that. I have finally narrowed my role, or recognized my role, embraced my role as the one that I can preach and I can propagate the way of discovering or meeting the truth halfway through in my specific ways. And if I get myself involved with any other ways, I run into the danger I might be shut up by the authority, whether that was an institution or nation or government. And I avoid that at all cost, not because I don't have a political view or I was not an activist. I was when I was really young. But I realize I must exercise my intelligence to reach to whom I can reach through the worthless language that I present. And so I know what China has done, but I also know what China has to do. And so politically, China, the inner Chinese politics, you know, there's only one country with officially 1.3 billion people, unofficially much higher. Mm. There's only one country. There's no second one so far. And no country can really imagine what it's like. I mean, all my friends have expressed the same. I take them to the People's Square in Shanghai on the regularly happy and clear day. And they will be, you know, they can only go in one direction, which is where the human beings move, you know. they will find themselves in one and a half million people on the street. And they understand suddenly, this is not an easy politic. You have to find a way to govern this country. Hmm. It's not easy. And in some ways, I find them very liberal, such as in the institution. I can do a lot of things I couldn't do in North America.
Really? Like what?
Oh, I can teach them very freely. I can do whatever I want. I can put on a class and with greatest ease. And they are most vital and they're willing, and things can be organized in no time. Whereas here in North America, red tapes after red tapes. I got my school new pianos within 18 months. Hmm. I told my colleagues in the West, and they say, that's impossible, maybe 8 years. You know? And I said, this is communism. That's why it worked. Hmm. In order, and it's in order, it's done. And so there are things such as that. And on the other hand, they can't lose face, can they? Hmm. So if they do something, they must save face from all sides. And so sometimes I have some private talks with some of the generals or political people, and they say, well, you know, we can't really do anything else because they have to stand up and make announcement, and the announcement can't have any second opinion to it. Hmm. That's that. On one hand, they get things done. On the other, there's no freedom. So there's the balance.
The new race, as we all understand it in a certain way, is a triangular thing between rising China, the United States regetting its bearings after Iraq, and the European Union. But there I see you, Chinese history, American training, European music in Shanghai, watching it all. I wonder, who do you root for? Who's winning? What's happening? How does this come out, Hong Kuan-chen?
Culture. It's a culture. If we think what can Germany represent, the composers, the great composers and writers, what can French represent? What can represent France? The painting, the fashions, the perfumes, the culinary art, the wine. What can Italy represent? The buildings, the Romans, or maybe not. Careful there. The music, the opera. The Pavarotti, oh my God, it's culture that's going to leave legacies for the race, for the nationality. It's not which war, I don't believe that. And I don't think it's going to be money. I don't think it's going to be who has the greatest power. Mm-hmm. But I believe the one which is going to contribute to the human wellness globally, and is what's going to count. And China has great culture from before, even though it was really hurt during the Cultural Revolution. They're bringing it back. They're trying very hard to bring it back. And I hope it will flourish one day again. And America, and I hope it's not going to be only baseball, football, the Pentagon, and the race to the moon, to the universe, but perhaps the wellness, the aesthetics, the music, the art, the inner peace, not the superficial. I got enough to live on, I got enough to eat, and my house is warm. Not just that, but also that when they listen to something, there is a joy inside that they want to show everybody how joyous they are. And that this kind of joy dominates life rather than, look, our money is back of to its value. We can travel again having fun. I think culture is the general world, and the culture is the platform where one should wake up and live to, and all this materialistic jargon is not going to satisfy the future human beings. And so who is going to lead, who is going to lose, who is going to be first and who is going to be second, it does not concern me very much. But I do concern myself with one thing. There's a huge population in China. You heard about that. There are currently 80 million little kids playing the piano or equivalent of the piano, which can be a keyboard. 80 million.
My,
he's right, you know. a few states together, you know. And if they develop even just this little sense of love for music, for the beauty, for something worthwhile that even in the worst time in their life they can fall back to and take refuge in, solace in, that'd be great.
Keep teaching, Hong Kwan Chen. It's a great pleasure to be taught by you on Open Source. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris, for having me. And, wow, peace to the world. And I learned something. Let me see if I can say. L'chaim tovim l'shalom.
Peace unto all. Thank you.